Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman alongside Mark Z. Great to have you with us today.
John, always great to be with you.
Always a pleasure.
A lot of fun.
The dynamic duo is back in the saddle. And we're coming to you today from the beautiful offices of Tarlo Breed, Hart & Rogers, our host for today on Radio Entrepreneurs. And as the name of the firm indicates, they are a law firm. And so today we're talking legal issues, which is always a fun thing to do. And I want to introduce our next guest with us today is Harris Weiner. Welcome, Harris.
Thank you very much.
Harris is with Salter, McGowan, Sylvia, and Leonard, based in Rhode Island.
We are.
You're Providence-based?
We are Providence-based, but we also practice in Massachusetts.
Wonderful. So, pleasure to have you on Radio Entrepreneurs. You want to tell us a little bit about your firm and what the areas of practice focus are?
We are an eight-man firm, three generations old. We focus on transactional work, estate planning, and business litigation. I also do some real estate litigation.
Excellent. So I know that that your practice focuses largely on business litigation, and one of the areas that comes up often are the area of non-competes.
That's right. And I've tried a number of these cases in Rhode Island and several in Massachusetts, and there is a difference in the approach in both of these states. Rhode Island is more likely to enforce a non-compete agreement. It's important to know your judge, because you get different results on the same facts from different judges depending on their background and their philosophy toward business or toward employees. Likewise, some judges have a philosophy about freedom of contract, and if you've entered into the contract, you're bound by it. In Rhode Island, there are still several ways to break a non-compete contract that's of relevance to both businesses and to employees. There are the traditional contract offenses, but in addition, you can ask the judge to modify the contract. It's one of the rare areas in the law where a contract can be reformed by the court, and the court has broad discretion to do that. That's why it's important to know your judge's background.
That's interesting. So that's a Rhode Island uniqueness in the state, or perhaps in others, but where the court will actually get involved in reformulating a contract.
That's universal, but in some states, non-competes are not enforceable. They're not enforceable in California under case law. They have been restricted in Oregon, Hawaii, Connecticut, in Rhode Island as to physicians, in Hawaii as to high tech. So there has been a movement statutorily to limit non-competes for policy reasons.
And the primary driver of that is people have a right to make a living, and you can't restrict that, although that's obviously only one of the covenants within a non-compete,
right.
Generally.
That's a key factor. And one of the ways I have broken otherwise valid non-competes is through the hardship exception. If I can convince a judge that my client, an individual, is so restricted by this covenant that he can't make a living and that he doesn't have the versatility or the flexibility to move to another area or another industry, I've had good results.
Harris, what about given that, and then you have obviously a strong attorney like yourself who's going to break the contracts to protect an employer? What about trade secrets? In other words, how can we for our entrepreneurial businesses? How can we protect our trade secrets and our confidential information if we're going to have a non-compete that's broken?
Well, most non-compete agreements are either integrated with a non-disclosure agreement that expressly lays out what the trade secrets and the proprietary information of the company are, or they're signed in tandem. In addition, and those are generally enforceable. In addition, there's the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, which has not been adopted in Massachusetts but has been in most other states. That can be a separate cause of action.
Interesting. When we write a contract, first of all, if I'm a Massachusetts company or I'm thinking of starting a business in Massachusetts or Rhode Island, given the nuances in Rhode Island, and especially with what's going on in Massachusetts, as you know, there are a lot of bills that continually get put before the legislature, and we're coming very close to having non-competes eliminated. Would you say that I should seriously think about incorporating in Rhode Island? And then if so, what kind of strategy for a business because especially a business like mine that may be a biotech company with important trade secrets, and then once you teach somebody, totally understand people have the right to make a living, but at the same time, teaching and investing in the training or recruiting process for my specific products in the biotech is very, very expensive.
Mark, that raises several issues. As to the last point, a former employee has a right to take his or her skills and knowledge with them. That cannot be prohibited.
Right.
You can't take customer lists. You can't take formulas and compilations and other things that fall under the rubric of a trade secret. If you do, you are breaching a fiduciary duty of loyalty to your employer. That is another separate cause of action. Even without a non-compete agreement, if you steal customers before you leave your employer, you have breached that duty of loyalty. And
sorry, Harris, I'm sorry to interrupt, but does that apply irrespective of where one falls within the organization or that fiduciary duty?
That's another great point. There's a movement in several states, including Massachusetts, to exclude low-paying positions from non-compete agreements.
Okay.
You know, usually it's the engineers, the salespeople, the scientists, and the executives who have the most access to trade secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the business has to protect its trade secrets. Number two, you have to be ready to go to court to seek an injunction.
Right.
It's a multi-tiered process, but the first hearing is the key to establishing a likelihood of success on the merits. So you don't want to be underprepared for the first time you walk into court with your hair on fire, asking the court to stop the bleeding.
Interesting.
When a client approaches me and says, my top salesman has just stolen 25% of my customers, I need to stop this. I drop everything. We spend the next 48 hours working up the facts, drafting the pleadings, and I try to get into court within 72 hours.
Time is usually of the essence.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Damages are way down the line. And in most of these cases, the injunction is what you want.
So when you're advising, whether it's startups or particularly biotech or companies that are technology companies with certain trade secrets that are growing, what's your advice early on as they bring potential employees to the process in terms of contracts, agreements, what can be signed, what can they do to protect themselves? It sounds like, obviously, do you have a separate trade secrets agreement? Do you have like certain provisions that you carve? Because I know, obviously, you do both. You protect companies as well as you handle both sides in particular situations.
There are several ways to protect trade secrets in the course of a lawsuit. You can bring an action under the statute. You can bring an action for unfair trade practices. You can bring a cause of action for conversion, a variety of other things. But you obviously have to screen people very carefully. You have to safeguard your trade secrets and limit them to key employees. And you have to enforce these agreements. You want these agreements are primarily for deterrence and not for punishment. If you aggressively enforce the first breach, you will prevent future breaches by other employees.
Interesting. So being really proactive and obviously setting a course of action in terms of so to prevent future actions.
Right. And in drafting your agreements, one size does not fit all. And this is a common mistake that an HR department will have one standard boilerplate non-compete, non-disclosure agreement. The lower-level employees are at a greater hardship than the upper-level people who have negotiated their positions and have more marketability. So you have to tailor these agreements to the particular level of the employee.
Interesting.
So I want to talk about process a little bit, because I'd imagine that as a prospective employer, I may be coming to work for you, you have a lot of leverage. I don't want to sign the agreement. You don't have to work here. What happens in the event where a company did not have an employee sign that on the way in? Do they lose that leverage? Is it very difficult to have an existing employee retroactively sign those types of agreements?
If you do wait, you're on somewhat fragile ground. You're going to have to provide them with additional consideration, more money to sign that restrictive covenant. And I have broken non-competes for failure of consideration when they've waited a year or two. It doesn't necessarily have to be cash, but there has to be some value given to the employee to justify them signing anew.
I would imagine it's not a completely unique experience. I mean, there must be a lot of companies, you know, perhaps younger companies, less developed companies, that, you know, that was one of the things that they did not cross. You know, maybe they didn't have good guidance or good advice. And so, you know, startup phase, maybe they don't have venture capital or institutional money in there, and, you know, sort of friends and family, and hire the first guy and they don't sign that non-compete. It must not be an all too unique experience.
Right. And also sometimes they go overboard and they make the non-compete too long in duration. You know, Massachusetts is trying to cap non-competes at 1 year. I have seen them as long as 5 years. I don't recommend, beyond 2 years to most of my clients. It also depends on the industry. They also are sometimes overbroad in geographic scope. They want to cover the entire United States.
Right.
But their business is really located in two states. That will be either rejected by the court or modified by the court. And in terms of the activity, they try to bar them from the entire industry when that's overkill. The non-compete has to be narrowly tailored to protect legitimate business interests. It is not a legitimate business interest to avoid competition. A legitimate business interest is to protect your trade secrets, your goodwill, and your confidential information.
So it sounds like to boil it down to common sense, be reasonable, be fair, be logical in terms of how you're setting it out, and don't try and be too restrictive in terms of what you're trying to accomplish, because it's probably going to be rejected.
That's right. And be aware of the legal climate, because legislation is moving pretty dynamically. New York State is trying to eliminate from the cover of non-competes, lower-paying jobs. Massachusetts is right now at an impasse on whether there should be a cash payment to a terminated employee during the period he's sidelined. Right now, that's a sticking point in the Massachusetts legislature. But Rhode Island is much more receptive to non-compete and a subset of non-compete, which is non-solicitation provisions, which is not as broad as saying you cannot work in this field. It says you cannot solicit your old customers for a period of a year or 2 years. And that is more likely to be enforced than a non-compete.
Right.
Just one other area, and we're limited on time, so maybe we'll have you back. But I noticed that in certain industries, it seems that it's not common practice to have any sort of non-compete. I know, and maybe it's changed in the legal profession. It's generally, you know, you walk out the door, you take your clients with you. Architecture is very often like that.
Well, interesting is, it's funny you mentioned the legal profession, because as Harris knows, in the legal profession, lawyers aren't subject to non-competes. So I think it's lawyers and physicians, right?
And physicians.
So are those carve-outs that were made in the legislation for those professions?
The legal profession is governed in Rhode Island by the Rhode Island Supreme Court, by the Board of Bar Overseers here. But it is by statute, a very recent statute in Rhode Island, that physicians are not covered unless it involves the sale of the business. Okay. If you sell a business and agree not to compete against the new buyer, that's more likely to be enforced than just simply an employment transition.
Right, right.
Wonderful. Well, Harris, a lot of great information, a lot of great insights for entrepreneurs. And as you said up front, you're a passionate guy about it, and that certainly comes through in the interview. It's been a wonderful pleasure having you on Radio Entrepreneurs. Our guest has been Harris Weiner with Salter McGowan, Sylvia, and Leonard. And Harris, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
My email is hweiner, W-E-I-N-E-R, at smslaw.com.
And your phone number?
401-274-0300.
Excellent.
Excellent. Harris Weiner, it's been a pleasure having you on Radio Entrepreneurs. We appreciate you coming up to the offices of Tarlow Breed, Hart & Rogers, and making the foray into Boston, which I'm sure you do on occasion anyways. And encourage our listeners, as always, to go to our social media platforms and like us and watch our content on our YouTube channel, where you can see Harris's interview and others. And remind you to stay tuned, because we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.